Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Welcome to another edition of Illinois Family Spotlight. I'm your host, David Smith. You can email us, as always, at feedback@ifiaction.org or follow us on Twitter at IL Family Action. Lori Higgins is back with us, a guest today. She is the cultural affairs writer for our sister organization, Illinois Family Institute. You can find her writing and articles at illinoisfamily.org. Over the years, Lori has written on a whole host of different topics that are in the culture or regarding culture, world, Christian worldview. And she does an amazing job writing thought-provoking and compelling articles that help us think through these issues. And you can find her articles, again, at illinoisfamily.org, and I encourage you to subscribe to the email list so you never miss an article. Lori, thanks for joining us again regarding the cultural issues and the trans ideology. One of the things that we left out in our previous conversations was this issue of BIID, which stands for Body Integrity Identity Disorder. You say it's similar to the transgender issue. Tell me, why is it similar and why is it different?
Okay, well, you know, it's really important in these conversations, cultural conversations, to have the proper analogies in place.
Sure.
You know, when we're dealing with homosexuality, they always like to use race. It's a terrible analogy. There's no points of correspondence. Better one is either consensual adult incest or polyamory. And the same thing goes with the transgender thing. There's a really, and of course, the transgender community likes to compare themselves to, you know, compare transgender ism, which they hate that word, to race. And of course, that's a terrible analogy. But there's a really, really good analogy. And it's a condition called body integrity identity disorder, which I have written about. People can go on and search for that and read about it. But in this condition, people experience a mismatch between their objective body and their subjective internal sense of themselves. And they want to bring them into alignment. So, but what they experience is, it's not their sexual anatomy that they find have problems with. It's their limbs. So they identify as amputees.
Wow.
And their experience is very similar, almost identical to those who experience gender dysphoria. They feel extreme distress over their physical embodiment. They want to bring it into alignment, their body, with their self-conception. And sometimes they even, because doctors will not amputate arms or legs, so sometimes they even engage.
You mean they won't amputate healthy arms and legs?
Exactly. Forgive me. Yes, exactly. So these people will sometimes engage in self-harm. There's actually a documentary out, if people want to watch it, called Whole, W-H-O-L-E. I wrote about it also. I've written multiple articles about this. And so they will engage, because, you know, sometimes you'll hear people who identify as the opposite sex who will say, you know, I tried to, you know, cut off my penis when I was a little boy. Well, these people do the same thing, and they will engage in self-harm so that when they go to, like, an emergency room, the doctor will have to finish the job. And actually, there was a more recent case a couple of years ago. It's usually limbs that they want amputated, but this was a young woman who always identified as a blind person.
Yeah, you wrote about this. Yeah.
Yes, she got a psychologist to, on multiple occasions, put, I forget what the horrible chemical was, like a plumbing clean out pipe.
Right, Drano.
Drano, yeah. I think it was something like that, but I don't remember the exact thing, into her eyes until she was ultimately blinded. And she even talked about how it's excruciatingly painful, but now she's blind and she does feel a sense of relief because this, I actually think of gender dysphoria and this BIID as similar to having similarities to OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, where people have an obsessive thought that they can't sort of get rid of.
Sure.
So, but no one looks at this young blind woman now and says, because she feels this sense of relief, So now that she feels this consonance between her mind and her body, no one thinks that that's a good thing.
No.
No one is pressuring surgeons to do this. In fact, a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, I can't remember exactly, there was a doctor, I think he was in Scotland, who did a couple of amputations on healthy limbs for people who experienced BIID. And then it got out in the public and there was a public furor. And so the hospital said he couldn't do any more of that. But the question is why? Well, I mean, if people can be castrated and have double mastectomies because of gender identity disorder, gender dysphoria, then why shouldn't we lop off arms or legs for people? I would argue that it's far less significant to lose an arm and a leg than it is to be rendered sterile and be castrated. And if we go to people go to the article I wrote about things that aren't, we don't know about this, they can read about the kinds of surgery that young men and women are having, phalloplasty and vaginoplasty, to see how extreme it is and the life implications.
It's very disturbing. Now, is this also taking place in our schools, our government schools?
No, of course not. But the question is why? What if a student comes and says, I identify as an amputee, sort of a colloquial term, they call them amputee wannabes, and they say, I'm going to be, you know, I want to have a parking place in the handicap parking sticker, even though they're able-bodied, they're actually not amputees. And here's the difference. If someone with BIID actually does have a limb amputated, they actually are now an amputee.
Right, right.
But boys can never become girls and vice versa. And what if they came and they said, at Deerfield High School, we had an elevator to get to the second floor that was only for like kids who had either disabilities or right. who had an injury, a sports injury. So what if they say, well, I identify as an amputee. I want to use that elevator. I want the extra passing time that amputees would, I mean, that someone, and I'm going to use a wheelchair and I want to use, would we ever do that? No.
No, that's crazy. Absolutely not. Well, one of the other issues that we touched upon in a previous podcast, but we really didn't explore in detail, was the mandatory pronoun use, the mandatory requirement, to use pronouns for transgender confused kids, or even, I don't know, colleagues, I don't in our schools.
Well, yes, and that's an important issue. There are administrators and teachers who have identified as transgender and are going to schools, and students are being told explicitly, this teacher is now a man, this woman teacher, or vice versa, and they're not a man, and that's a lie. But yes, this is going on in many schools now, that you have the administration sending out emails to teachers, sometimes the whole staff and faculty, sometimes just the teachers who will have a gender dysphoric student, and telling them that they must use opposite sex pronouns, which are, I will say, grammatically incorrect.
Right.
Because pronouns function to denote and correspond to objective immutable biological sex. And in fact, I wrote an article a couple weeks ago, well, I don't know when this is gonna air, but, and it talked about in a document put out by the National Association of School Boards,
right.
They have a series of Q&As about this issue. And they said specifically, the question was, if teachers refuse to use those pronouns, can they be disciplined? And they said yes. And in fact, it said they might be able to be disciplined for not forcing students to use opposite sex pronouns if any kind of bullying takes place. And of course, transgender kids believe they're bullied if they're not treated as if they are the sex they want to be. And what's really important about this is for Christians, sex pronouns constitutes bearing false witness.
That's exactly right.
John Piper did a small little audio question and a Q&A about this and said, someone asked the question about, and they were not in schools, but it goes for schools, they were in the corporate world, what if we're told we have to use opposite sex pronouns? He said, as Christians, you cannot do that. Names are a different issue, but you can't do that. He said, you have to tell your administration, and then you better start looking for a new job.
You know, what's bullying for some is tyranny for others. I mean, you think about this, you know, they may feel as though they're not being treated with the appropriate respect and care because we refuse to lie about their pronoun. But at the same time, they want to force Christians to lie.
And right.
That's just plain tyrannical. Now, Lori, let me just ask you, is this part of the whole incrementalism that you talk about frequently?
Yes. And this is another thing that conservatives don't get, because, and I think they use it a lot of times to rationalize their own cowardice, because they don't want to say and do the hard things that we need to say and do. As I've said, the halcyon days for Christians in America are over. It's not going to be easy anymore. And right. So incrementalism is just the way cultural change happens. It happens by generally, not giant, dramatic, single events,
right.
but by little steps and the little capitulations people make to error, to wrong thinking, to evil. And we say, parents will say, well, I'm not going to go complain because it was just one scene in one movie that the teacher showed, or it's one passage in one book, or it doesn't really matter if I just use gay instead of homosexual. And the left rejoices because they know that's how they win. Change the definitions of terms, intimidate people into using those, and then they've made one more step in the direction that they want to move the culture.
Wasn't it Francis Schaeffer that said, the unthinkable in one generation becomes thinkable in the next generation? And that's a big part of this, isn't it?
Well, it is, and we continue to do it. So they'll say, well, the pronouns, it doesn't really matter. Yes, it does matter. Language matters, and the left gets that. George Orwell talked about newspeak in 1984. Yes. Language matters, and we continually capitulate. I had a conversation, it was early on when I came to work for IFI. It was a very well-known homosexual activist named Timothy Kincaid in California started emailing me. And in one email exchange, I was using the word homosexual, which is not considered a pejorative. It's not an insult.
Right.
And he knew that. He didn't think it was insult, but he kept telling me I had to use the word gay. And I said, I'm not going to use it, Timothy, because gay embodies a set of assumptions with which I disagree. Mm-hmm. And he got angrier and angrier and angrier. The point being is he knows that language matters.
Yes.
And we continually capitulate on every term the left comes up with.
Oh, excellent point. All right. Well, listen, we got to take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk to you about the institution of marriage, SCOTUS, which is the Supreme Court of the United States, and the case that's before them right now, the Jack Phillips case, the masterpiece cakes from Colorado. And then I want to round it up with anger.
Yes.
All right. We'll come right back.
Americans have been traveling down the health insurance highway for decades. But lately, it's been taking us to places we don't want to go. For Christians, it's hard to know which road to take. Or is it? Samaritan Ministries provides a different direction, a biblical path for their members to pray for each other and share financially in each other's medical needs.
This idea that Samaritan has adopted from the book of Acts should permeate all parts of our lives, not just health sharing. We, as a body of believers, are living out New Testament Christianity. This is what God intended for the church.
Do you believe that you need an insurance company, or do you believe that God will provide your needs? And there are people that you've never met before who are going to pray for you and meet your needs. There's another way.
Looking for a new direction for your health care? Visit us online at SamaritanMinistries.org.
All right, welcome back. We're talking with Lori Higgins, the cultural affairs writer for Illinois Family Institute, and we're talking about trans ideology, as well as now we're going to talk about a little bit about marriage, the institution of marriage. And Lori, you have written quite a bit about marriage. You say it is something that it has a nature and that we don't create it. In other words, man doesn't define it. Governments don't define it. We merely recognize and regulate it.
Well, yes. And what, even secularists, even atheists are able to recognize, they should be able to, and some do, that marriage is something, that it has a nature that we just recognize. In other words, we look around the world throughout history in every country, and we see people pairing off, and then they produce children and they raise children.
Right.
So So I wrote an article several years ago saying, let's imagine we'll give the term marriage to homosexuals and we'll give them every privilege, responsibility that comes with it. So that's, we'll give that to the community in which two people of the same sex want to marry. And then we have to look around, we have to say, well, we still see this other kind of union, which is procreative by nature. In other words, homosexual unions by nature are sterile. Right. So there are clearly heterosexual couples who are sterile. That's a disorder. There's something wrong. You know, the effects of the fall affect our bodies and some people are sterile, but it's the way children come into the world. We still need a word for that as language users. So give it something else. Well, would the left tolerate that? No, because they want to pretend that those two kinds of unions are identical and they're not. But so that's what I mean. Whether you believe in God or not, you can look around and say there is this thing, this kind of union, heterosexual, procreative by nature. And so when the left comes and says, well, we're just expanding marriage, they're not. They're redefining marriage. And they're saying, we're going to recognize something that I would argue is intrinsically non-marital, and we're just going to call it marriage. So this is why I object to when people say, even conservatives, marriage is an issue left for the states. Well, yes, in the Constitution, it's left for the states. But that doesn't give the states carte blanche to do just anything with it.
No. And I would argue as a conservative Christian that truth matters and truth is universal. Truth is not going to change from Illinois to Indiana to Wisconsin. The truth of marriage and the institution of marriage is consistent across the board.
That's right.
Now, you point out, too, though, okay, so one state may say it's legal to marry at 17. The next state might say no, 19. But
right. You know, if they have to have waiting periods for a divorce, if what kind of blood work do you have to have, and, you know, all sorts of things like that. That's what regulating it means. Those are the things that are left to the state. And Here's my comparison. The Constitution also leaves education to the states. The federal government is not supposed to be involved in curriculum or something.
Right.
So if we say education is left for the states, that's the shorthand. We would never go, well, therefore, some states can say carnivals are schools, and some states can say bowling alleys or strip joints are schools. In other words, when we say education is left to the state, there is an a priori definition of what a school is, of what education is. It's the same thing with marriage. States have the right to regulate the thing that is marriage. They don't have the right to define things that are not marriage as marriage.
Now, even despite the 2013 Supreme Court ruling that said marriage should be equal for homosexuals and heterosexuals, you and I get in trouble with leftists because we continue to say that, I'm sorry, homosexual relationships are not equal to marriage, that is man and woman. They're not equal, right?
Well, here it's one of the problems that people have with equality. Because this is what I call it tricksy rhetoric to say, oh, marriage equality. Because every time Americans hear the word equality, they are like, oh, yeah, well, we are for equality. But equality demands that you treat like things alike.
Right.
The union of two men or two women is not
different. It's different.
It's different. And here I'll go back to what homosexuals say. Homosexuals say they're only attracted to people of their same sex, erotically, emotionally, blah, blah, blah. That means that the two sexes are different. They're different in significant and substantive ways.
Right.
And so therefore, a union of two people of the same sex is profoundly different from a union of two people of different sexes.
That's exactly right.
And so I don't have to treat, this is not disparaging about to homosexual people. I don't have to treat that union identically to a union of two people of different sexes. And then that gets to the question, which we should be, we've never talked about, I don't think, is why is the state involved in marriage? Like, is this, because the left will say it's just a private institution. Well, if it's a solely private institution, there is no more reason for the government to be involved in that private, sterile union than there is in the government recognizing and regulating platonic friendships. Like, the government doesn't care if me and my best friend stay best friends forever or decide we hate each other and go our separate ways.
That's right. That's right.
And why is the government involved in heterosexual marriage? Because it's the way children are produced. And what serves the interests of the state are the ways that children's needs are best served and protected. And they're best served and protected by being raised whenever possible by a mother and father, preferably their own.
That's right. And that produces healthy, productive members of society in the future. That's why the government's involved. Yeah, good.
And, you know, Barack Obama came for in his first administration and issued Mother's Day and Father's Day proclamations.
That's right. You wrote about that. Yep.
Yep. Mothers are essential to their children's lives. Yep. Fathers are essential. And then he came out incoherently and endorsed a form of marriage that says either mothers or fathers are expendable.
Which, by the way, he was initially... at least on the record, when he ran for president of the United States, against. Because it was politically expedient to do so. Well, let's fast forward to this ruling. Jack Phillips owns Masterpiece Cakes, a bakery out in Colorado, and he does wedding cakes frequently. And he actually declined business from a homosexual couple, a gay couple, who came in and said, we want a wedding cake for our gay marriage. And he said, sorry, I can't do that. I'll sell you anything on the shelves here, anything that's already been done. But I cannot create and use my artistic abilities to celebrate something that violates my conscience. And in early December, the Supreme Court of the United States took up this hearing to find out or to determine, they'll rule probably in June of 2018, whether or not LGBTQ rights or gay marriage supersedes the rights of religious liberty in the First Amendment. What's your views on this, Lori?
Well, it should be noted that the Jack Phillips also didn't do cakes he wouldn't decorate cakes for Halloween and for other occasions.
I didn't know that. That's good.
Yes, other events that violate his beliefs.
Sure.
So, of course, he should have that right. What you hear the left say all the time is that he refused to, well, he and, you know, Baron L. Stutzman, the elderly florist in Washington, and then there's calligraphers now. I think they're in Colorado.
And then we had a situation here in Paxton, Illinois, where...
Yes, bed and breakfast, and the photographer, Elaine Huguenin, in New Mexico. So there's all sorts of Christians who are being asked to provide goods and services to for homosexual marriages. And so what the left says continually, I don't understand how they get away with this in the press, that they refuse to serve homosexuals. It's completely false. And virtually everyone that I know of has served homosexuals.
That's right.
They have, you know, Baron L.
Even employed homosexuals.
Yes, exactly. The issue isn't about their sexual orientation. The issue is about the type of event they're being asked to produce goods and services for. And so this is a type of event that violates their conscience, that the God they serve abhors, and they shouldn't have to use their gifts and labor to do that. The Jack Phillips case is focusing on expressive free speech issues. But I would argue, because I was reading something by a pundit who he was just explaining what this case was based on, and he was comparing it to, it's not like someone who's providing folding chairs for a wedding, that there's no expressive purposes. But I argued that even those people are entitled for other, the legal argument would be different, but even those people, because if I am a folding chairs provider, I don't want to provide them for a type of event that violates my conscience. Okay. And so any business should be able to do that. I, of course, would have no problem providing folding chairs if two homosexual men came in and said, we're having a birthday party for my elderly mother and we would like to have chairs. I'd say no problem. I don't mind providing them for the birthday of an elderly woman, even if her son is the one hiring me. It's not his homosexuality. It's the type of event. It's weddings or commitment ceremonies. And this is what I argue. Marriage has a nature central to which is sexual complementarity. Without that, it's not a marriage. I have never, if I were a cake baker, So I call these anti-weddings, meaning they're the antithesis of weddings.
That's right.
Because of what, and so I have never produced an anti-wedding cake and for an anti-wedding. And so they're saying, you're going to produce a type of product you've never produced before. And now some people say, oh, it's all cake and flour and butter. And I say, no, a birthday cake is not a wedding cake, is not an anniversary cake.
That's
so they all have different messages and they're all for different types of events. So they're trying to force him to serve, to express himself artistically,
yeah,
in way to celebrate an event that he doesn't serve, that he doesn't honor, and that violates his conscience. And they're telling him to serve a type of event that he's never served before.
Well, it's really dangerous to try to speculate on where the court's going to come down on this. It seems as though Justice Kennedy is going to be again the swing vote here. Maybe, maybe not. Justice Ginsburg asked some pointed questions during oral arguments in early December. Maybe we'll be surprised at the count, you know. But in the meantime, I would encourage all listeners to pray. Pray that God that our First Amendment rights to religious liberty and freedom of expression and association is all protected in the Supreme Court by this case. I mean, it's kind of important. But
it's really important to note that it's not just our First Amendment doesn't just protect our right to express ourselves. It also protects our right not to be forced to express things.
That's right. And then that's the very definition. I go back to the word tyranny. It's tyrannical to have the government come in and force us to do something against our will. A number of pundits have written stuff like, hey, should a Jewish deli owner be forced to cater, a neo-Nazi event? I mean, should a black printer have to create t-shirts or pamphlets for a KKK event? It's not just religious liberty, it's freedom of conscience.
Right. What the homosexual community will say about that, those kinds of questions, is it's different because theirs is an identity like race. So if a Jewish person that shouldn't have to be forced to do a message for a neo-Nazi event, those neo-Nazis, it's not their identity. What they fail to take into account is when those of us who are in Christ, that is our identity.
Yes, exactly.
and it is more central to us than our sexual orientation, than our skin color.
We see everything through that. We're supposed to, at least.
Exactly.
All right. Well, listen, Lori, I want to end up here real quick. We've been talking about republishing an article you wrote back in July of 2009 titled Anger and the Church. By the way, that can be found at illinoisfamily.org. And to which you say, you know, it is okay, Christians, to be angry and to get upset. It's not okay to sin. It's never okay to sin.
Right.
But
right.
You wanted to talk briefly about this, and why is it important that we do get angry and engage and get involved?
Well, actually, I'd rather talk at length about it, but briefly. But yes, well, I think there's this grave misunderstanding in the Christian community, maybe even more in the evangelical community, which is the one I'm in.
Yes.
That we're not supposed to be angry. And I wrote this article. It's not mainly my ideas. It's other great thinkers talking about, you know, to be angry means we need to have our emotions properly shaped also. We're to train our emotions also, not just our intellect, but our emotions. And there are things about which we should feel angry. And the failure to feel angry often prevents us from doing the things we should do. So the Bible commands us to be angry, but sin not. Of course,
yes.
We have a discussion about what constitutes sin, but I don't think impassioned speech or bold truth telling constitutes sinning. And so we need to, like, we should feel angry that babies are being slaughtered in the womb.
That's right.
We should have felt angry about slavery. We should have felt angry about Jim Crow laws. And we should feel angry that we are harming children.
That's right.
Through separating them from their parents. You know, homosexuals, the only way they can have children is to purchase genetic material and rent wombs and things like that. We should feel profoundly angry that we're stopping puberty in healthy children, castrating teenage boys, doing double mastectomies. We should feel angry about that.
That's right. And misleading and teaching that this is normal, this is fine, this is good, that we're just evolving or whatever. They're lies from the pit of hell, furthering a spirit of rebellion against the Creator God who made us in His image. And also, I would say, fostering a spirit of discontent. Yeah, you know, you can improve upon what God did. You shouldn't be, it goes back to even plastic surgery. You don't like your nose, you can fix it. You don't like your ears, you can fix it. You know, you don't like your chin, you know, all those things.
Right.
It does foster a spirit of discontent, and that's not what we're called to.
And vanity and pride. I mean, those last things I'm talking about, not, sure. I'm not saying that's part of the whole trans and homosexual thing, but I mean, we're like,
Can we ever ask, Lori, though, what we should be angry about? If Scripture says, be angry, but don't sin, do we ever stop and ask ourselves, well, what should I be angry about?
Exactly. And then how should that manifest? You know, people, you know, one of the problems is when you're talking about these issues, like the trans issue and the homosexual issue, you have to kind of separate, you know, if you're talking to your friend who's struggling with same-sex attraction, you're talking gender dysphoria, or you're a pastor counseling someone, you talk very differently than you do if you're talking like I do about activists promoting evil, wicked, false, destructive ideas to children in public schools.
Let's make that clarification then, because, Lori, that's an important distinction there. We're not talking about people who are struggling, who are seeking, who are victims maybe even of this pernicious ideology. We're talking about those who are promoting it. Those are false teachers who are saying this is good and championing this in the public square, right?
Big difference. Right. I'll mention Peter Hawkinson, who's the pastor of Winnetka Covenant Church in Winnetka, Illinois, has now become an apostate, maybe a heretic, and is slowly trying to lead his congregation in the direction of affirming homosexuality. That's something his congregation should feel angry about.
Right.
And do something, not in a sinful way, but do something. And as you were saying, now here's what's hard. Yes, sometimes someone who struggles with these things might be in an audience where I'm speaking very strongly about, but we don't say that. We don't say, man, we can't condemn adultery because someone in here might be committing adultery and enjoy doing it. And, you know, so yes, that is the unfortunate part, but we cannot retreat from speaking truth, even impassioned truth. You know, I will say this. People sometimes say I shouldn't be sarcastic or I shouldn't have called some behavior evil. And I'll say, okay, then I'll call the people who do that broods of vipers, because that's biblical language. And I think people who go on and are promoting this trans ideology in schools and in the medical community, I think they're broods of vipers. And if people don't like that, you know what, then so sue me.
By the way, who used that language?
Yes, exactly. That's my point. And then here's what people will say. Oh, well, they only use those for the Pharisees. And I'll say, but did it say that we can only use it for Pharisees?
Well, besides
and who are the Pharisees today?
Yeah, John Mauch wrote a very good book called Jesus in the Courtroom, where he says, and he points out, that the Pharisees were not just the religious leaders, they were the political leaders of
right.
the day. And so they were the culture makers, for goodness sakes.
Right.
For that. So anyway, thank you. Very good word. And I would encourage people to go to our website, illinoisfamily.org, and check out her article called Anger in the Church and all of her other writings. So, thank you, Lori, for taking the time today. I'm Dave Smith, and you've been listening to another edition of Illinois Family Spotlight. We'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.